Salutations, Mets fans, and welcome to a special edition of, for all you kids out there, the official prospect.
Prospect? The official prospect?
So, I've been drinking since 5:30, and Jarrett Seidler, who is on this call along with both Kates, angrily G-chatted me that he wanted to do a podcast. After Terry Collins let Rafael Montero hit for himself in the bottom of the first inning, top of the second inning. Yeah, that's right. And then was left in to give up home runs to Matt Latos and Anthony Rendon. I told him I absolutely would not record a podcast while Gabriel Yanoa was still in the game. Fortunately, or unfortunately for me, they pulled Yanoa after two innings, so we're doing a podcast. We're calling it the Wally / Raffy / Gabby / Terry spectacular. It's okay. Me, it's Jarrett Seidler, it's Kate Morrison, it's Kate Feldman. It's gonna be a little more free form than even what we normally do, I think.
Do we ever have any form?
I mean, at 6:15 I was g-chatting video with Craig Goldstein showing him how to make an old-fashioned. That was like 3 hours ago. That's how my day is gone. How's your evening gone?
We should have gotten Craig on here, too.
We should have. I don't think he's writing about Rick Porcello right now.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing.
He
wanted to know if it was just BABIP. I don't know if it's just BABIP. It might be just BABIP. He might be BABIPing his way into a Brady appearance on the podcast. I don't know.
Let's just run down.
So we want to start around 5:30. We'll start around 5:30.
Okay, let's start.
Around 5:30, I think Craig broke it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had all the info all night, so.
I'm pulling into the Super Walmart to do my food shop.
I was sitting on my Raymore and Flanagan outlet sectional with a grilled turkey and cheddar and a Manhattan.
Raymore and Flanagan has very good couches.
They do. That's a nice couch. I like the couch.
I was Skyping my dad complaining about my life, so.
5:30 your time is 4:30 my time, so I was watching the Men in Blazers live show, which was predictably crap.
Yeah, so they haven't been good since the NBC move. They were fine when they were at Grantland.
Their podcasts are so good, but I figured I'd watch. I watched the Everton-Sunderland game because.
Yeah. I'm a football ramble guy, so Men in Blazers doesn't do it for me.
Ben Buzz does it for me, but I watched the Everton Sunderland game, so that's why I just left the TV on.
Yeah.
So
Sunderland's not very good.
No, they're not. They're 11-minute
hat trick to Romelu Lukaku. That's not generally.
I mean,
a good
Lukaku's
thing.
Pretty good. Yeah, like sure. Lukaku might be unfucked this year, which would be nice.
And he should score goals
if
against
Lukaku
Sunderland,
could be
even as like.
Like if Lukaku could be unfucked, that would make my life a lot easier. Anyway. Now that we've all given the GPS location for where we were when this news broke, continue with the story.
So the news breaks. Jeff and I immediately go yes with lots of S's.
Yeah, I mean, we should preface this by saying this is an unusual story to break on September 12th.
This is the kind of thing that gets dumped at the winter meeting.
Yeah, you can quietly bury this in November. Like, he's beginning to pursue other opportunities. That's kind of when staves for next year get leaked anyway, so
the idea that he resigned while the major league season was going on was immediately like, fuck no, he obviously got fired.
Well, I mean, Mark, so it's always interesting. So this is not a player development story, to me at least, because nothing that got leaked on the player development side, I think, is a surprise to anyone that's been paying attention, or b, specifically a surprise to me and Jarrett, who are ridiculously high info when it comes to this kind of stuff anyway.
And also perhaps hear things occasionally.
Yes, and I think even our listenership is probably aware of this kind of thing, because I've been banging it into their head for 4 years at this point on various podcasts.
So to me, this is more an ownership Alderson process story.
I think it's a New York City media process story, because I'm curious about who's getting what information and who has Wally Backman on speed dial.
Well, yeah, that's also, there's been some shining examples of that kind of stuff. We'll get there.
Sure.
So, Sandy Alderson claims that Wally Backman has resigned in some sort of mutual parting of the ways.
Wally Backman agrees with this, apparently.
Yeah, Wally Backman claimed this on Twitter.
Okay.
Like 5 hours after this all broke, but yes.
So, within, I would say, 5 minutes of the news breaking, the Mets do like a Red Sox style, like shiv in the back on the way out news dump. Like, this is every horrible Wally Backman story we've heard over the years. All confirmed.
Yeah.
Well, I would say 90% of them confirmed. They leaked that Alderson had been trying to fire him for 3 years and that ownership wouldn't let him. They leaked all of the dirty laundry over playing time decisions, over pitcher handling, over insubordination, over not following organizational directives. And that got leaked through certain news outlets.
Certain news outlets that are not in Wally Backman's back pocket for quotes.
And other news outlets started defending Wally Backman. You know, he's an old school baseball guy and the guy on the field supposed to have this. And Terry Collins had kept agitating to put him on the staff and evil Sandy Alderson was stopping it. And he's so respected in the game. And real baseball men appreciate what he's done. And he's clearly going to go somewhere better. First of all, do we think Wally Backman ever manages an organized baseball again?
I mean,
it's possible.
It's certainly possible.
I could see him going to Arizona.
That was actually Ed Coleman brought up that if, and Ed Coleman is obviously someone who's pretty connected to Backman himself. He even admitted it during his hit on WFAN. Because if we remember, I was driving around food shopping during all of this. So I heard the Ed Coleman spot on WFAN. He said that he thinks that if the current Arizona front office stays in place, that Backman has a pretty good shot at that managerial job. But
that's something.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
But there aren't a lot of organizations that are going to put up with this kind of stuff now. And the Mets right now might be one of the 5 or 10 most hard-nosed, old-school, tough-em-up baseball teams around there, and they couldn't fucking stand the guy.
And that's something that I think gets sort of underreported. People assume that Alderson's like this ivory tower, egghead, sabermetric GM. By modern standards,
well, Jarrett,
he's really not.
Was even, Jarrett and I had this conversation the other day, actually, about Alderson and about how he, and you know, we're talking about how everybody eventually gets old, because at one point in time Alderson was like, he was on the leading edge of this stuff, but this is what you have started to see happen as we've moved into sabermetrics 2.0 and even possibly 3.0, is that the people who were at the very forefront, they reach a point where they just stop, where they just don't, like, where there's no more, because there's no more real encouragement for advancement, because they get to a point where things are going pretty well and then they hit kind of a plateau and it's like, oh well, it's working for us, so we don't need to pay. And you know, and maybe sometimes it's not that they need that they lack in advancement, but it's that they have an ownership. They end up with an ownership that says, oh well, but sabermetrics is supposed to be about saving money, right? So, well, you can't go get me the this and the that because I need you to not spend money.
So
when you fall far enough behind, it can be really hard to catch up.
So Sandy Alderson became known as the sabermetric GM because he handed all of his staff copies of Bill James baseball abstracts on a yearly basis. Anyone want to guess when the last Bill James baseball abstract was?
98?
No. The last Bill James baseball abstract was in 1988.
Well, I mean, the last historical abstract was 98.
That's the last historical abstract. He's still been doing it, like, until recently, he'd been publishing, not, like, the big, thick books, but pamphlets, at least. Like,
yeah,
with,
but he used to do, I mean, he did something fairly similar to the Baseball Prospectus Annual. It's where the original BP guys got the idea because James had stopped doing it. He was famous for handing out the yearly Bill James baseball abstracts. They ended in 1988. Sandy Alderson was at the cutting edge of bringing sabermetrics into baseball in the mid to late 1980s. That was a very long time ago, folks. Several people on this podcast weren't born yet.
No.
And he's had, bringing in Di Podesta certainly, I think, mitigates that to a certain extent. But again, DePodesta started in scouting, and I think his specific responsibilities with the Mets were certainly more on the scouting side. I was more likely to see him behind home plate than anywhere else.
The Mets are Mets are not on the leading cutting edge of analytics.
And Ben Bauman's like taking them to task on Twitter for not keeping up. Their former director of analytics, that's now TJ Barra, of course, who's a friend of the podcast, and I'm sure does good work for them, but...
But they do not have, like, the 25-person analytics department that the Dodgers have.
Well, but nobody has the 25-person analytics department that the Dodgers have.
But they don't
So we
even...
can't really... Do they have, like, a 10-person department?
I think they have two or three guys,
yeah.
Two or three? Okay. I've heard of ones that do good work as small as four. I've heard ones that do
decent work
at as small as, it's... I do think that you don't need the 25 that the Dodgers have, but the Dodgers' whole thing is an exercise in bloat.
Title creep.
I don't want to put down what the Mets do analytically. They just don't have a large department. TJ Barra is a scouting guy at heart.
Yes.
They are focused on blending scouting and analytics and putting it all together more than being on the absolute cutting edge of the analytics themselves. Which is fine. I have no problem with that. But when
and the point here is they still can't fucking stand Wally Backman.
Yeah, I mean, this is, there are not a lot of organizations that would have been better suited for a minor league manager like Wally Backman. And fuck, go look at any beat writer feed if you want to see how that worked out.
And,
you know,
as a formerly hot managerial candidate who went back and worked his way up into AAA for multiple years, you would think he would be more of a name for major league openings than he was in recent seasons.
One of the things they leaked, I believe, to Carrig.
He's never interviewed for a job.
He has never interviewed for a major league job except with the Mets during his Mets tenure.
No, this was full, like, Punic War, we are salting the earth here.
He didn't interview to be somebody's first base coach. He didn't interview to be somebody's bench coach. They did not have requests from other teams to make a lateral move to AAA manager. He did not interview to be somebody's minor league farm director, which is, a role that a AAA manager could get as a promotion. He was just stuck as the manager of the Las Vegas 51s.
So what do we think happened that finally brought this to a head?
Maybe he was in negotiations or like trying to talk his way into, well, if you seem like you're gonna fire Collins, just want to get some ideas on what my status will be for next year. And then there was, you can't fire me, I quit.
So the precipitating event, based on the timing, would seem to be that he didn't get brought up to the major league staff in September again. Sure.
Did they bring up anybody? I have not been paying particularly close attention to that.
Not that I'm aware of.
Because last year he didn't get brought up, and it was...
They brought up Lopez.
Lopez, yeah.
Because they weren't able to bring Lopez up the year before because Bingo was playing until like September 22nd or whatever. So it was like... I think they brought him up 3 years ago, but...
They brought him up in 2014. I'm pretty sure.
So if we want to get conspiratorial, do we make any connected dots between this and Tebow? Like this was the price for signing Tebow internally?
that might be a bridge too far for me.
Is that too much of a conspiracy theory?
That's a bit of a conspiracy theory.
Okay. It's a good one. Yeah. I'm not going to say it's not a good one, but that might be
stuff
a bit.
Like that. Stuff like that
sure,
does happen.
Sure.
There's horse trading, especially in this kind of situation.
I'll take the bullet in the media and pretend like I wanted to sign Tim Tebow, but...
Right.
And the timing is auspicious if you want to go in that direction.
But obviously...
Hot, fresh conspiracy theories here.
There was something that happened that caused Jeff Wilpon to allow this firing, or caused Fred Wilpon to allow this firing, where, as has been reported by a number of media outlets, one or the other Wilpon had been blocking it for a number of years. So what exactly that was, you can speculate. Backman's pitcher usage was probably more outrageous this year than it had been in years past, although it had been pretty outrageous in years past, too, at times.
R.I.P. Jack Leatherhead.
Kind of peaked at that point.
But, the Montero and Gilmartin stuff was noticeable this year. There were one of the things that Matt specifically leaked was that he wasn't getting Nimmo and Conforto enough playing appearances.
And that's totally about Wally Backman and not about Terry Collins.
Sure. But that was, that he was batting, T.J. Rivera and those guys high up in the lineup and perhaps not batting Conforto and Nimmo and Cicchini as high up. We saw, Las Vegas lineups where, Mark Krause was hitting, five spots ahead of Gavin Cicchini, and it's just what the fuck? And again, there's, Wally Backman and Terry Collins were allies within the Mets organization. I feel like that somehow was a secret, even though it probably shouldn't have been, but it's definitely not a secret now because it's been repeatedly said.
Sexier narrative if they weren't friends.
No, but Terry Collins would talk all the time, whenever he needed, thoughts on a guy that had just gotten called up.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a surprise that a lot of Wally Backman's favorite guys in Vegas got more playing time than maybe they should have at the major league level. It's not like those two guys don't talk.
Yeah. And they, Collins would frequently refer to talking to Backman often and getting his thoughts on guys and guys that perhaps were rumored not to be Backman favorites are some of the same guys that have gotten inexplicably buried on the Mets bench too.
And after all that, Jarrett and Cates, the Mets had to play a baseball game.
And for some fucking reason,
I don't know about that.
Montero. Okay. So let's set this up. I'm just,
go ahead. This was your.
Okay.
This is the predication for you G-chatting me about doing a podcast. So
Rafael Montero was up in relief in April and gave up 3 runs in 2 1/3 innings. He went back down to Vegas. His ERA in Vegas. Now this is Las Vegas, but his ERA was 7.20. He had a 68-40 strikeout to walk ratio, and he got sent down to Binghamton. At Binghamton, he pitched well, but fuck, he's a 25-year-old in the Eastern League, and the peripherals didn't support it either. He had a 40-19 strikeout to walk ratio. Despite this, the Mets called him up. We have no idea why.
The Mets have literally called up everybody.
We should also go back a year where Terry Collins was publicly pillorying Montero in the press for faking an injury.
Oh, yeah. The organization hates this guy. That's not the secret. I'm not breaking any confidence by saying it.
But he's a familiar face.
Sure.
Wait, who do they hate more, Nice or Montero?
Nice. he takes the ball on August 29th. He was at best the fourth or fifth option to take the ball on August 29th. We couldn't figure out why then. He pitched 5 scoreless innings in between walking 6 batters. It was one of the strangest scoreless outings you'll ever see. But nothing in this outing should have given them the idea that he was going to continue to not give up tons of runs.
But he outdueled Jose Fernandez. Right.
So they lifted him 5 and out. So they sent him back down to Binghamton to throw a, what would we call it? Basically a live bullpen.
No. That was before his third start. Before his second start, both he and
it was before his second start.
They pulled him on Saturday because both he and Yanoa were supposed to pitch that day and let Yanoa go out and throw 8 shutouts in Vegas.
No, that was before the first start, Jeff.
Before the first start?
Yes, before the second start.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
They had him throw they wanted him to throw 30 pitches. In those 30 pitches, he lasted 1 1/3 innings and gave up 3 runs,
including a bomb to Kristen Stewart.
Yes,
report that I got there.
Yes, I got the same report. Nevertheless, he came out and started the next game, where he walked 4 and gave up 3 earned runs in 4 1/3 innings. And they kept him in the rotation for this pivotal game against the Washington Nationals, despite any number of better alternatives.
That seems smart.
they didn't have to use a fifth starter. The off days lined up that they could have skipped the fifth starter, and not only would it nobody would have had to pitch on short rest, but several guys still would have gotten a day of extra rest because they have another off day coming up on Thursday.
And then what happened, Jarrett?
Just read his line score.
Trey Turner reached on infield single.
Yep.
Trey Turner stole second. He was at second before the ball was released. Jason Wirth walked. Daniel Murphy hit one about 9,000 miles per hour exit velocity, single to left center. Bryce Harper walked.
At this point, Gabriel Yeno is already up and pretty warm.
Yes. Anthony Rendon, I have no idea what he was doing, but he struck out on a ball like that almost hit him. Wilson Ramos walked. Wirth scored. The corpse of Ryan Zimmerman struck out on a slider like 2 feet outside. Danny Espinosa flew out. Now, the game is only 2-1. Rafael Montero's just thrown perhaps the worst inning I've seen this year and has somehow only given up 2 runs. So the Mets get runners on
first
and second with 2 outs. And Rafael Montero comes to the plate. Rafael Montero is also one of the worst hitting pitchers I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's not like Jacob deGrom or Noah Syndergaard where you could kind of like maybe leave him in and then bring him in. No. And fuck it. It's September. You've got 900 people on your bench. You won't play
Michael Conforto. Yeah, you got Michael Conforto's on your bench.
It's fucking Matt Latos. Put Brandon Nimmo out
a
there.
Cat named Cat like, Latos.
Rafael Montero remained in the game and struck out looking. He then served up one of the meatiest meatballs I've ever seen, where the aforementioned...
He got to 3-2 on Latos in the first place.
Yeah.
But he started him off with a first-pitch slider. And let's be clear, Rafael Montero, in the many years I've been following him, has never started a slider in the strike zone, I'm pretty sure.
Rafael Montero has a 30 slider. It was his fourth-best pitch. It's now his third-best pitch. It's bad. He's a fastball.
Who was calling the game? Was it DeGrom or not DeGrom?
Supposedly Darno, it was being called from the bench.
Yeah, it was.
Was intimated. I wasn't paying close enough attention, but apparently
Darno was supposedly looking into the dugout
after every pitch, which isn't a surprise that they had the bench calling it with Montero out there.
Right. But that's what I was assuming.
Matt Latos.
So who on the bench was calling it? Because Worthen, we know that Terry... What?
Dan Worthen. Oh, okay.
Well, because I was saying that we know Terry Collins can't be calling it because he can't concentrate on more than one thing at a time.
I know Guerin used to call them. You think it's Worthen calling them now?
I think it's probably Worthen and not Scott, yeah.
I'm still not sure what Dick Scott is doing. By the way, we're just going to out here.
The Nationals are using, like, the garbage parts of their bullpen. This game would still be, like, really big to win. And they had a 7-run comeback against the Nats last year. Terry Collins was pulled Cespedes. Anyway.
Yes, but we have found Conforto again. We didn't actually lose him.
Ty Kelly is hitting for you on Cespedes. Anyway.
I was worried that you had ramped down since you G-chatted me.
Matt Latos, 3-2, homer to left. Turner smashes the ball to third, but it's a line out. Wirth flies out to left. Daniel Murphy, like, destroys a double to deep left. Bryce Harper intentionally walks. One of the pitches Darno, like, had to make, like, an acrobatic catch of.
Gabriel Yeno is being dry humped in the pen right now.
Yes, Gabriel Yeno is throwing a complete game in the pen in these two innings. But no, Terry Collins leaves him in to pitch to Anthony Rendon. Anthony Rendon hit one of the longest home runs I've seen this year. And that gave it to the game.
I like this podcast, but I don't have to say anything. They're the best.
Well, I was convinced to be on this podcast by, you're really going to let Jarrett yell for an hour? And then I signed on. So, I mean, you didn't lie.
No, I didn't. I never make false promises.
What did he fucking say? Just imagine, like, I'm doing the Chris Mad Dog Russo, like...
Oh, please,
we don't have to imagine. You just did it, man. No, we're all witnesses.
I'm also doing, like, the hand gestures, too.
That's good.
Oh,
Well, I threw this out on Twitter, but for the record, and for any listeners who are not caught up yet, Jarrett said that on Saturday the Mets still had a chance to win the NL East.
We know he said it on the podcast. All the listeners
I know,
probably have heard
no.
that already.
I'm making just in case everyone got caught up.
And the funny thing is, the Mets aren't even going to really get killed by this because Liam Hendricks is throwing a no-hitter against the Cardinals right now.
Kyle Hendricks?
Yeah, see, I did it. I said on the last podcast.
I know you
I would
did.
Do it,
I
and
know
I did it
you
again. Yeah. That was when I have two. When I'm like making drinks on GChat with Craig. This is what happens. And they can again skip.
That sounds like a PBS like local access show.
He said I got to work on my game a little bit before I can have my own TV show, based on my like fumbling with my phone and pointing at the pot of boiling water and my drink setup.
I'm just how many times like this was legitimately like 11 batters too late. Like out of the game when Harper walked.
Maybe Collins was, I don't know, maybe he was distracted by the fact that he had Michael Conforto on his bench and he just couldn't think of, like, there were just too many things to think about with all of the things that were just going on. And he just, it was either, you know, well, he couldn't, he could either, you know,
37 players, too many possibilities.
I just don't know. I mean, because the other night I was sitting here watching the Rangers game, and they actually, I think, I can't remember who,
this
Nomar Mazara tripled. Nomar, hey, I'd like to see you to tell me to shut up. Anyway, this was
continue
this
with your Nomar Mazara story, Kate.
Anyway, I promise this ties in. Like, how easy is it for you to see that a slow runner triples late in a close game? Like, Maz triples late in a close game.
Are you, like, pounding your
what
mic
did they
while
do?
You're doing this?
I'm sorry, I'm hitting the ottoman that my mic is on. I have, like, feelings right now. I haven't even been drinking. And then, so what do? You pull Maz and you put Jared Hoying, who can actually run, on third. Like, how hard is that? And
you
then,
know, you gotta set up your pitchers for the eighth, because it was gonna be anyone other yeah, than Addison Reed at any point in time this season.
Right. Like, I mean, you had the Mets example there to go.
The amazing thing was, in that same game, he forgot to double switch, so Reed couldn't face the extra batter in the next inning.
Also, you burned Hansel Robles on one batter.
Yes.
And
there were, yeah.
I don't want to downplay the complex interpersonal relationships and decision-making you have to make as a manager, but none of that's really in play in the eighth inning of a tie game. You just take Wilmer Flores out because he's slow.
Okay, so Carrick just dumped a bunch more information.
Ooh, gimme, gimme,
oh,
gimme.
Good.
Gimme.
I just feel like
he's
tweeting.
Is he, like,
working
a game right now? I guess it's 8-1, so he doesn't have to, really.
Yeah, what are you...
I mean, that gamer's already been written.
Yeah.
Gamer's already been filed. Gamer's already been, sit on this till the end of the game, but it just update the score.
He did confirm that the Wilpons basically... for some reason allowed him to be cut loose recently, but wouldn't otherwise. Specifically, the three guys that Carrig mentions that they thought he mishandled were Conforto, Cicchini, and Pulecki. Which also...
I haven't been following the Pulecki stuff that closely, so...
I didn't know there was Pulecki.
Often batted at the bottom of the order.
Yeah.
And disagreements range from the distribution of playing time to lineup construction. Regarding those three specifically. Anyway, back to Rafael Montero. I mean, this was legitimately like 10 or 11 batters too late. Like, this wasn't
a lot of 20 batters.
Second batter.
Right.
Like, he couldn't locate a pitch. Like, just pull the guy. You have
a
starter.
Sometimes in the first, you leave a guy in just because you can't. You hope that he'll get it back together. You hope that he'll. You hope you get one, and then you get
Rafael Montero. You don't.
Yeah. Well,
Rafael
okay. I'm just
back together in his life.
Yeah, no. Not when it's okay. Rafael Montero. Not when you have starters in your bullpen. Not when you're in the middle of a playoff race. You don't. You pull the guy.
So presumably, I think Steven Matz is taking this start the next time it comes up. Based
they can
on
also skip it.
They can yes, they can still skip it because they still have a bunch of off days coming up. I guess the report was that DeGrom is probably going to pitch once or twice out of the bullpen, maybe as soon as this weekend, because hey, they don't have anywhere to send him on rehab assignment. So
yeah.
Your rehab assignments are now live in the major leagues.
Did Keith just like broke a camera on air?
Keith has been punchy since about the first inning of this game, so.
Yeah, no, but I think he literally punched a camera. Like the one in the booth. All right, and my stream froze. Continue your rant, Jared. I'm sorry, honey.
This is an organizational thing. Because, you know, they could have designated Rafael Montero for assignment and called up Paul Sewald. Paul Sewald is way more deserving of this call-up than Rafael Montero is. It's not like they didn't have other guys that weren't on the 40 that deserved this spot. They could have called up fucking Dwayne Bellot. Dwayne Bellot was a much better pitcher this year than Rafael Montero.
Let's not say things we can't take back, Jarrett.
He was! He put up a 5-2 ERA. A 5-2 ERA is better than a 7-2 ERA. I'm just saying, you know. Just saying here. You know, there aren't a lot of better options in Vegas for this spot, but there's a couple.
Liam Hendricks is totally winning the Cy Young Award if he... I did that on purpose that time.
Okay, so like, Paul Sewald's like a really cool story. He signed for $1,000. He struggled all the way up.
That's not a cool story. That's like a reason to overthrow the bourgeoisie.
Yeah, well, it's like this great, like, rags to riches story. He became Vegas's closer. He was one of the best relievers in the PCL this year. He's 26. He's borderline prospect, but he's a guy that could reasonably have a 5-year bullpen career.
Sure.
Where's his call up?
Who are you dropping off 40?
Rafael fucking Montero. They still have guys that can move.
I knew you were gonna yell at me. That was a joke.
Don't yell, Jared. You're losing your sense. Your vaunted sense of humor seems to be lacking tonight.
Yeah, my vaunted sense of humor. I mean, they still have guys that can move to the 60 day. They could have called up Paul Sewald anyway. Be that as it may.
There's too many people in the locker room, Jared.
No, we're still pretending that everyone's coming back this year.
I mean, John Neese is still on the 15-day DL. They could have moved Neese to the 60-day.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Actually, that's kind of hilarious.
Yeah, no, Neese is still on the 40. I'm looking. Yeah, Neese is the, like, super obvious guy, but you also...
Who is Neese Lagares? Wait, no, who else is on the...
They've been kind of talking like Lagares might play again this year, so...
They don't think Lagares is going to be able to swing a bat, but they think he'll be able to field and run.
Oh
good.
Oh, okay.
This getting back into conspiracy theories, how much money do you stand? It's always better to make the playoffs than not make the playoffs money-wise, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you can sell the wild card participant t-shirts or whatever.
Okay. Because I was wondering if this was an exercise in getting the park to sell out until the end of the season without actually having to go to the playoffs.
There's two things.
No, I don't think they're doing it.
Direct playoff revenue is shared. It depends on how far you get. So just getting to the playoffs gets you a piece of the total revenue pie.
Okay.
There's also obviously ancillary benefits, which include filling the park up, which include season tickets for next season.
Right, you get all the you get the playoff tickets sold, and you end up getting
so there would be fundamentally no point in that particular game.
No, it's not like, you know, Connie Mack always used to say his goal was to finish second, not first. Because he would get the gains from the playoff, stretch race, but he wouldn't actually have to deal with the World Series at that time. But the games changed so much since then.
I also can't imagine that the Mets of all teams could be sneaky enough that they could get that past anybody.
So I think the idea, like, really is that the guy that they wanted to give an extra day of rest was probably Syndergaard, who would have had to pitch this game on normal rest had they skipped the start.
Right, and they'll have the same decision to make, you know, with regards to him the next time around, too.
Assuming that either Mats or DeGrom isn't prepared to take the start.
You want to make that bet? That either those two guys are actually healthy?
No, I really don't.
Did we give one of them?
Yeah, I gave him either of them.
But
yeah,
like,
I mean, they're pushing DeGrom.
Like,
Max is just kind of like hanging out.
Sean Gilmartin's had a bad year. I would still rather see Sean Gilmartin go out there for a couple innings. Like, you can, like, even, like, throw Sean Gilmartin for, like, three innings and then Gabby Anoa for three innings. And since you've got this giant fucking bullpen, it doesn't really matter anyway. Like, you don't need to save.
You can do a Johnny Holstaff game, certainly, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And you have that guys.
Also means, that also relies on. Okay, Terry can't manage a normal bullpen game, right. though. Like, we're going to trust him on a Johnny Holstaff game? Because I don't.
Well, that's the problem. You have a manager right. who can't trust him to do any of this stuff.
Right.
Can't even trust him to not let Seth Lugo go, like, third time through the heart of the order every single time.
Yeah, but it's work, so you don't question it.
That's the kind of logic that ends up with Rafael Montero starting this game to begin with. And I like Seth Lugo. I've been agitating to see more of Seth Lugo since, like,
well,
May.
You're going to get a lot of Seth Lugo down the stretch, so.
You know, I've been advocating for Seth Lugo on this pod, but Seth Lugo's probably being stretched a little too far right now, too. I think it's okay to say that, you know. Seth Lugo's probably not a guy that should be throwing 100 pitches in 7 innings every outing, especially based on the fact that he appears to be getting hurt when he does that. You know, this is a guy
that never happens to Mets pitchers, though.
Yeah, I mean, this was a guy that, after Wally was pitching him way too much in Vegas, ended up in the bullpen. Because, you know, like this is a great Seth Lugo start. Seth Lugo threw 108 pitches over 6 innings, giving up 7 runs on May 26th. In AAA, how is a guy throwing 108 pitches, giving up 7 runs? Like, what the fuck?
I mean, it is Vegas.
I've
I don't know the exact circumstances of that game, but sometimes you do end up with a dead pen, and so a guy just has to go out there and wear it.
You don't have the guys, the 40 man guys that are actual.
Yeah, it's not usually the 40 man.
That is true. I'm just saying that sometimes you do end up with somebody who's not, maybe not on the 40, but somebody's like a borderline prospect. I have to go out. I've seen guys wear games just because there were like 2 pitchers in the bullpen and the guys after them were your actual 40 man guys. So you couldn't, they were both 1 to 2 inning guys. So you couldn't ask them to go out there and throw 4.
As was pointed
but
out.
Even however, had Richelson Pena, who I saw
in May at this point, Seth Lugo is what, your number 3 pitching prospect? That's like close to the majors.
Seth Lugo is probably something like the number 2 guy on the to getting a call at that point.
Yeah, you're not. You don't let him wear one.
No, it's like the Jack Leathersich thing from last year, where he had Jack Leathersich.
Yeah.
Double his previous high in pitches in his first game back in AAA. There's a story there. I don't know if we're ever going to hear it on the record, but there's definitely a story there. Keep asking around, folks. And, you know, Jack Leathersich hasn't thrown...
I'm sure our good friend Keith Law will get to the bottom of it when he writes his New York Mets organizational expose.
You know, and that... You know, so Jack Leathersich... I'm going back to find the exact circumstances.
It was 57 pitches.
It was 57.
It was 57 pitches.
Jack Leathersich...
And I remember when this happened because...
Probably because both
we
of us were yelling
phone.
About it.
Well, no, because I wasn't really friends with you, Jeff, at this time. I was friends with Jarrett, and Jarrett spent, like, literally 30 minutes
that
on the phone
sound
just
like
yelling.
This was the
like,
least surprising
literally,
story
literally
in the world.
30 minutes on the phone yelling about Leathersich, and, like, I had never heard of, like, any of these prospects. I'm just like, okay.
Jack Leathersich just made it back to AAA, like, 2 weeks ago.
I was about to say, what's he even doing? He's still with the Cubs?
Got claimed on waivers by the Cubs. Yeah. He actually had a reasonably decent, like, Tommy John recovery season for them. He three levels in the minors, struck out 13 per, 193 per. He also walked 5 per.
It's Jack Leathersich season,
it's Jack Leathersich, yeah. So Jack Leathersich appears to be back to being Jack Leathersich. But, you know, this had a tangible cost. This cost the Mets a legitimate major league quality relief prospect because they ended up not being able to carry an injured pitcher on the 40, and they lost him on waivers to the Cubs. And I'm sure by that time, Jack Leathersich was probably really fucking happy to get out of that organization because, I mean, Christ, that's almost like a lawsuit-worthy thing there. Like seriously, that's like... It, and this guy kept his job for another year and a half after that. Like, that's... You don't need any more information other than he took a guy who was a top 20 prospect, who was on the 40-man roster in his first appearance down from AAA, and had him wear one for double the amount of pitches he had thrown at any point that year, and the guy tore his UCL doing it. That gets you fired in any organization.
And on that note, we'll see you next week, or this weekend, for another edition. Jared will probably still be angry about it, though. For all you kids out there.